welcome to the Pet Savant Unleashed. And I am unleashed today because we're talking about puppies, puppies, puppies. Yes, the favorite of all people, well, anyone who is worth anything, and loves animals, because if you don't like animals, there's a problem there. But puppies, puppies, puppies. So let's talk about what makes a good dog when we start out with a little puppy. You know, I've heard this for years and years and years. People say, wait a minute, I don't understand. I got this puppy. I raised this puppy from a baby, and it's just got problems. But I've had dogs my whole life. And people wonder, why is this puppy different? Well, you know, I joke about things. You know, Jeffrey Dahmer had lovely parents, but it doesn't mean that his genetics were also good. So yes, can the nature versus nurture? Of course, nature definitely has more to do with it. Nurture has something to do with it. But you know how we all see, you know, you have a family that the father's in doing one thing and somebody else is doing something and maybe the father's not even there. And then three of the kids are in trouble and one winds up being a Nobel laureate, or, you know, Mother Teresa or something so wonderful. Well, there's a reason for that. Okay, that's nature. Nature doesn't always mean just genetics, but it's the way your genetics, your DNA combines. It's the way the circumstances surrounding your creation, which is at the moment of conception, that way that starts from the moment that puppy or that kitten or that human begins to become something on the way to becoming what it will be someday. That moment and the moments following that cannot be dismissed. As a matter of fact, anecdotally, I'm going to tell you that there are people who have had dogs for their whole lives, experts, and that dog still winds up having big problems. Why? Because nature. I know people say, oh, what's the percentage, nature versus nurture, or what came first, the chicken or the egg? It doesn't matter for chicken or egg because that doesn't impact us. But nature versus nurture absolutely does. This is why you can get something wonderful that pops up, or, you know, have a family with, you know, dark eyes, and suddenly 8 generations from there, they have a blue-eyed baby. Because it was nature. It was in the genetic code. It was in the DNA, the way the DNA combined. Blue eyes don't come from brown eyes. So there had to be that genetics. And that's where I look at, I say to people who don't believe this, they go, oh, well, Janice nurtures everything. Okay, so you take a child or a puppy or a kitten who came from troubled background, and you keep working with that child or that puppy or that kitten. And depending on how you work with that, yes, of course, for optimal results, it's like saying, yes, I've got, you know, the best family in the world versus a, you know, mediocre family. Yes, that matters, but it's not everything, and it's not even most of it. Puppies go through different phases of development, just like little kids do. Babies cry. How long does it take a new mother to try to figure out why the baby's crying? But then she figures it out. She knows her baby. So it's the same thing as a puppy. You can learn the puppy's signals. But there's a point at which you have to say that, let's say a crying baby, a normal, healthy crying baby, might be crying because he's hungry or he's wet or he's tired. But if you have a baby who has, let's say, an issue like he's croupy, he can't breathe because he's got asthmatic condition, or he's got some kind of a genetic issue or a congenital issue, that no matter what you do, that condition exists. It's the same thing with puppies and with kittens. I hear all the time, and I've been getting tons and tons of people with cats calling and saying, hey, what do? My cat attacks me. Well, cats are kind of funny because, you know, I have to have my good friend on the show to talk about this as well. But you'll not believe it that, you know, cats have maybe more behavioral issues than dogs do. When you have a cat issue, like moving, think about what we do with our dogs. We take a dog, and this is going to be what I'm talking about today. We take our dogs and we take those pups from the time they're little. Most people take them out and we get them socialized because we know that's important. But guess what people don't do when they have cats? You don't take your cat out of the house. Maybe you let it out of the house. But people are holding the kitten, that's great, but they don't take it anywhere. So I'm going to just tell you, if you cat people, please, or if you're a dog person or a horse person who has a cat, please continue to take your kitty out, especially when they're young. Get them out. Let them see outside. Let them have, if you can have other people outside, inside, hold them. Let them get more socialized. Because what happens with cats, those of you who have cats will be like, oh my gosh, you're so right. Well, with cats, cats don't go out. We don't socialize them. When's the last time you saw a cat class at the box store? Hey, bring your puppies. It doesn't say bring your puppies and kittens. But you on your own need to do that, because this is why when we move to a different place, assuming you're well-socialized, you have a normal dog without major congenital or genetic deformities or conditions, you take that animal out and we take him to, you know, get training, or we take him to the ball field, or we take him to a dog park. Problem is, I've never heard of a cat park. So we don't socialize our cats and kittens like we should be, because if we did, we'd have so many fewer issues. But this is why a lot of times, and I guess everybody's moving in the month of August and into September, I have had probably 7 or 8 different people calling me needing behavioral help for their cats. And almost every one of them, there's just one of them, but that one got it as a little older cat, so we don't know the history. But all the other ones, people got them either very young, a couple of them bottle fed, one was a foster failure from a rescue. Everyone has the same issue. They move to another building, to another floor. The one is literally moved from one apartment to another in the same building. And the cats are going crazy. And almost all of them have been attacking the owners, or attacking if anybody did come in. Usually a cat will more run from a stranger. But the people that they feel comfortable with, even sometimes another animal, but generally their owners, they will actually attack their owner. So I've seen some pretty vicious scratches. The one cat literally lunged at this owner's face and was holding on with its claws and biting and scratching. And I mean, serious, multiple stitches, worse than I've almost seen from almost any dog bite. Almost looked like a shark bite. Like a baby shark that had attacked her. But this is why I'm telling you, phases of development are going to be our key here. If you are blessed enough to have a young pup, now listen, please listen to me, because I'm going to help you so that you don't become one of those people who calls me and says, you know, a year from now or 2 years from now, the dog just attacked my baby. The dog just bit my husband. The dog doesn't let people near me. The dog tries to jump out a window because it sees another dog. You can, a lot of those, even if a dog or a puppy has the poor genetics, which you may not know at the time, I'm just telling you something. You can help it. You can mitigate it, but you're probably not going to be able to fix it. A dog who's anxious is always going to be anxious. What can we do to mitigate that? That's what we're talking about today. A puppy who is very, very anxious, one of the things you can do is lightly socialize the pup. Lightly. That means not that we're going out, we're just going to be flooding this animal with everything, but taking it in small doses, taking the puppy, even if, especially if the puppy is a little anxious, or if the puppy is nervous, or if the puppy isn't socialized, or if it came from a bad, you know, bad quote unquote breeder, or was born under a trailer, whatever. You can mitigate that, but it doesn't mean you're going to be able to prevent all of those things. The best thing to do is to take that puppy, start from the beginning, start and have the knowledge that I'm going to give you today about the phases of development, about what to do, what not to do, because this is what is going to help you to mitigate any negative behaviors that might pop up. So let's first talk about just anxiety in general. Okay, anxiety is normal, right? If you think about it, to be a little bit anxious or to be a little bit excited about something, excitement is a form of anxiety. So that's okay. So we don't want to remove that from a pup if the puppy is excited to see people. But I'm going to give you a for what instance one here. Let's say your puppy is anxious and nervous, and you can see this because you bought the puppy from something in the, you know, one of the Pennsylvania or Ohio puppy mills, or you got them at a pet store, or you got them from a person who, you know, had an oops litter, or the puppy wasn't born to a wanted family, was born just wherever, and the people didn't know what to do, or the mother had parasites, fleas, ticks, some kind of, you know, coccidia, which many of them have anyway, or something worse. Well, then those, it's actually nutritional can be part of it. And if the mother dog was anxious and stressed, if mama was stressed when she was pregnant, you've got much more of a significant issue. I'm not going to call it serious, but that's the word I want to use. But you've got a more significant issue because that actually can affect her stress hormones, including cortisol. And we all know that when, if you don't know, if you haven't been listening to my show long enough to know, cortisol is your primary stress hormone that is secreted when you are getting anxious. Now, that can lead to adrenaline, you know, release of adrenaline. But when mama is consistently anxious, okay, long term, because first of all, she's stressed because she's pregnant. She may not know where she's getting her next meal. She probably has parasites, other things that go on. It stresses her body. Now, all that release of all these stress hormones when she is pregnant, especially the first trimester, which is the first 3 weeks, since puppies take 9 weeks, not 9 months like we do, 9 weeks, which is, you know, 63 days typically. And what happens is once these stress hormones are released over and over and over again during development, it affects, or not always, but it is very likely to affect that puppy or dog. This is why when you have a litter of puppies, they tend to have very similar temperaments. If you go to an AKC show breeder of merit like myself, you go to somebody who's a phenomenal breeder who has just great dogs, like fantastic dogs, and you have a whole litter. Maybe one will be a little bit shy. Maybe one will be a little bit more bold. But they're pretty much, as long as your breeder knows how to breed and do a light line breeding, you're going to have very, very similar puppies. As a matter of fact, if you want to get a tougher puppy, there are breeders that I know of who will give you a slightly tougher puppy. But there should be no one breeding for aggression. There should be no one breeding for poor temperaments or for poor health. Because you can do everything. What do you look for first? Do you look for temperament or do you look for health? Well, I look for both because I want the confirmation there so my animal is going to be as much as I can possibly give it the advantages of not having bad knees, bad hips, lots of arthritis, anything when it gets older. So my dogs do not have those issues because I'm very careful in what I breed and whom I breed to. The other issue is temperament. So let's say you say, okay, well, I want it healthy. I don't care if it's got a bad temperament. Well, obviously aggression is no good, but how about an anxious dog? A dog that's going to be anxious for you for its entire 5 to 10, 15 years. When a dog is anxious, it also takes a lot of toll on the body of your animal. So if your animal is very anxious, you've got to do something about it. And I'm not a big proponent of medication, but I'd rather have an animal have 10 or 12 great years than have it live 13 years with having such anxiety that it has no life. But there are different conditions and circumstances for that. And then, of course, the last thing is physical health. So if an animal isn't healthy, it's going to die young. Well, so all of these things are not really good if they don't go well. So I'm telling you right now, when you go to an AKC show breeder, a good AKC show breeder of merit, and I don't mean somebody who buys a puppy and, you know, four generations down it finally, you get it, and it has nobody in the background. The reason it's so important to have, if you are purchasing a puppy and not rescuing, that's fine. But please don't purchase from somebody who's doing it in their backyard. It's their first litter. It's their fourth litter. If it's going to be a purebred dog, go to somebody who is a recognized champion of the breed, because this is what a hobby breeder is. It's somebody who breeds to better the breed, to make each individual stronger and better, live longer, better temperament, better health, all those things. So the phases of development can often be tied to this. And you'll say, oh, well, you know, I know the fear impact and flight instinct and second fear impact phase, but my dog is still afraid. That is probably what I'm talking about, nature versus the nurture part. So if you have young kids, and believe me, I rescue, you don't even know how many thousands of dogs I've rescued, I've been involved with, I've litters, I've whelped for people, cats and dogs, because they didn't know what to do. But basically, by the time they're born, you can put all that time into them. But if they're developed already and their brains are developed, which they are, after that first trimester into the second trimester, if an animal is going to tend to be anxious, you're going to see it right from the beginning. So if you see a puppy and you go, oh, that one's kind of anxious, I have a one-year-old and a three-year-old at home, you know, my kids, please don't pick that puppy. Somebody will get that puppy, but you want to make sure you got to take care of your family, because otherwise what happens is you're not doing that puppy any good by taking that one if you don't have the perfect situation for it. I'm not telling people don't take the puppy that needs work, because that's the puppy I would take and a lot of my rescue friends will take, because we know how to handle it. We don't have little tiny kids around. We don't have anyone who's going to get injured if that doesn't go well. But for you, be a little bit selfish for your family, because I've seen this over and over again where somebody is, you know, a young couple, they got married, they're going to have a baby, and they go and they get a puppy or a kitten, and they go, oh, I'm going to get this one because I'm going to love him so much that he's going to turn into a great dog. Maybe, but maybe not. And then what are you doing? Then you're passing the dog around. Once you have your kids, you're passing that dog around from person to person, or rehoming it. And probably better than, I'd say, 75% of people who are young people who mean well, have beautiful, pure hearts, want to help this animal, the animal winds up getting rehomed. It is not something that I'm criticizing you for. I love your heart. I love how pure you are. I love how you're thinking, I want to make a difference. But you can do that later when your kids are all grown up, not now. Because if you can't handle that, you are now rehoming a 2, 3, 4, 5, I mean, one of them was 8-year-old dog. And they're like, well, we want to rehome them. An 8-year-old dog with behavioral issues and who's aggressive because it just was aggressive, you couldn't fix it because you can't fix nature. You can only work on the nurture portion. And unfortunately, I would say it's at least 75-25 from my anecdotal evidence of tens of thousands of animals that no matter what you do, you still have the problem. Listen, I had an autistic dog. And I mean, he literally was, I'm not being facetious, but he was autistic. You couldn't have asked for somebody better than me to work with him behaviorally, nutritionally, everything, right? I'm the one who fixes everything. I managed him. But if I had had little kids in the house, or if I had had grandkids in the house, or nieces, nephews, anything little that was going to be in that house, there's no way I could have done it. So there are plenty of people, and you can be one of those people. Remember the show today. When someday you say, wow, you know, all the kids are out, I'm going to go rescue that dog we were talking about on the Pet Savant Unleashed. We're going to talk about that. And honey, we're going to get that puppy that we couldn't get back then, because now we don't have little kids around. Now we don't have, or if we do, we can manage it because the kids aren't always there. So let's just talk about actual phases of development. What I'm going to do is come back to you in a moment. So we'll take a very, very short break, and then we're going to talk about all things puppy. We're not going to be so serious. We're going to be fun. Going to learn all about everything and what to do, what not to do for your, let's call it, normal, regular, healthy old puppy.
All right. Well, we will be right back. Hold on. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Okay, as promised, welcome back to the Pet Savant Unleashed. So we're talking about phases of development and puppies, which is the most fun thing in the world to talk about because babies grow up to be adults. Puppies grow up to be dogs, which is the best thing in the world. So let's talk about those phases of development. Now, earlier in the show, we discussed about different things that can't be changed. The nature portion. You can't change the nature portion unless you're a really good breeder. And I love breeding dogs that are high quality, that have everything. And there are a lot of really great breeders out there. Most of them are going to be your AKC show breeders of merit, which means that there are a lot of standards. There are certain things, the criteria they have to meet in order to get that award. And it is really something that I feel that if you are going to get a purebred dog, please get one from an AKC show breeder. Choose your breeder, wait for your litter, or choose two breeders and wait for your litter. If somebody has a ton of puppies available at any time, they are a puppy mill. Not good. That's somebody who's breeding for money. You want somebody who's breeding for the love of the breed, for what they can make their dog stronger, faster, smarter, live longer, healthier, better temperaments. Those are the people you want to get a dog from, okay? Doesn't mean that your neighbor down the street who had an oops litter isn't okay, but you want to make sure that the mama is a happy, healthy, young enough dog, but not too young, and that everything that possibly could be positive in that puppy's future is going to be done. So I'm not saying don't rescue, because I'm a big rescuer. But I also know that the ones that I've seen, like we have a dog out at our ranch, and this dog, we've had her for 6 years. We got the puppies and her when the puppies were a few days old, and we got them, raised them through a foster who was wonderful. Excellent, excellent, excellent foster. I know she did everything right. Lovely, lovely lady. So we had those puppies from the very beginning. And trust me, my staff knows how to raise puppies, because I know how to raise puppies, and we did everything. We also had a litter of our own pups that we were breeding as show line puppies, but that were actually out there, and we watched them next to each other, puppies that were a couple of days different in age. And we'd had the purpose-bred litter that was bred properly, that had all its vaccinations, its health checks, its hips, elbows, thyroid, bear surf, all their clearances, and all of these things. And then we watched the one that was born under a trailer, literally under a trailer in a trailer park, this whole litter, that the mother was under the trailer in the trailer park for her whole pregnancy and gestation of 63 days, or at least at the end of it. So this dog, when it came in, the mother had every parasite in the world. She was just terrified, and she was terrified. Would not bite. Sweet. Wanted to be sweet. And my person out there said, you know what? I want to give this one a shot. I said, fine, we've got a litter of beautiful puppies, but let's grab that one because the same people can take care of both. So we literally had the same staff, the same hours, everyone taking care of them. Both of them were raised in the house in different rooms by the same people. And all six of the little puppies, they were adorable. They were probably like maybe Jack Russell, Beagle, Puggle. The mother kind of looks like a puggly, you know, that kind of fat body, round. That's kind of what she looks like. Yes, we still have her, and amazingly so. We were able to adopt out the puppies. We put tons of training into them. Nobody left young. The youngest one was probably 6 months old, and some of them didn't go till they were almost a year. And this is a year of professional training that would cost thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, maybe tens of thousands for the ones that left it more at a year. And that you would think out of six puppies, one of them would have panned out to be a service dog. Nope, not one. The other litter
was 12 Ridgebacks. And the 12, 11 of the 12 became service dogs, and we kept one because that was the purpose of breeding, was to breed a beautiful litter that we would be able to have for showing and for future, you know, procreation. But all 11 went to be service dogs, literally 11 out of 12. The other ones, 0 out of 6. Now, granted, that is just a one-off case, but we've done this so many times, and we've had over 200 litters through the many years that I've been doing this, that I have assisted in whelping or whelped or in, was very intimately involved with getting these dogs to become, you know, adults. And you'll see it time and time again. So if you see a puppy who's very shy when it's very young, chances are it's going to have that temperament for the most of the rest of its life. But doesn't mean that dog is no good. Doesn't mean that that dog shouldn't be adopted. But make sure that if that dog is very, very fearful when you start out, that you take it out, you socialize it lightly, don't flood it. Flooding is actually called, it's called flooding because if we think about water, water is necessity for life, right? We need to water our plants. We need to drink water. We need to bathe in water. We need to have water for processing different things that we do in life, different industrial applications. Water is like critical. It makes plants grow. And without water, we'd be dead. There's just no question about that. Water is critical. But too much water is called a flood, right? So water is great, but too much water, not great. Do you see where I'm coming from? So a little bit is good sometimes, but too much of it is not. I like a dog who's a little bit more focused on me. I like to have a dog who's social, but if I turn my back and start walking the other way, that dog will follow me without my having to beg it, bribe it, throw treats at it, or anything else. I want my dogs to be social, but I want them to know I'm the mom. I'm your mom. You stay with me, and I will always keep you safe. So think of that as we go into today's show, that you want to make sure that your puppy understands what it is that his job is. In other words, where does he start and what does he need to do? So first of all, what to do? We're going to socialize the dog. I call it light socialization. Light socialization, not heavy. Meaning, don't go and think a little is good and a lot is better. A little versus a lot. Wow. So a little bit of something is good, but a lot is not. A little bit of makeup on a pretty young girl or on an elderly person. A little bit of makeup makes you look prettier, makes you look softer, makes you look younger, makes you look more vibrant. A lot of makeup? Well, you can think of some celebrities that wear a lot of makeup. Does that look good? Oh, no, it does not. Okay. Think about a little. Okay, loving somebody. You love somebody. You love them a little. So you're kind to them. They're kind to you. You love them a lot. That's still good. You love them too much. We have War of the Roses, Fatal Attraction. We have a lot of different movies that are predicated on too much of a good thing. Think about anything in life. Having really great eyebrows and great hair is great, right? But having your whole body covered by hair and having to go for electrolysis for the rest of your life is probably not a great thing. So what I'm saying is a little of something can be good. A moderate amount of it is generally good. But when you go over the top, it's not. So think of it the same way with socialization. You're socializing your dog, your puppy, adult dog as well, if you get a new dog, or if you have a puppy that starts suddenly in some of the fear phases having problems. You're still doing the same thing, but don't push it as much. So if you're, let's say, working with your puppy for 10 minutes and you see at 9 minutes he starts getting overwhelmed, stop at 8 minutes. Don't push him to 10. Don't push him to 9. You push him just before, and then slowly you build that back up. And you may have to back down to 2 minutes of socialization, but if you do that, make sure that it's a positive experience. I'm not big on giving treats because I'm a behaviorist, but I give my dogs treats all the time. I just don't bribe them. I don't give it to them a quid pro quo. If you do this, I'll do this. Now, that doesn't mean I don't use it for obedience, that I don't use it for, you know, teaching a puppy to sit or lie down or things like that, or that I don't give them if they're I'm reinforcing a behavior like potty training outside. Of course, and that's fine. But we've all seen people, and I hope you're not one of them, but if you are, please laugh at yourself. Please don't get mad at me. If you're one of those people who walks around with a bucket of treats strapped to your hip and walks around literally throwing food every time the dog sees another dog, or anytime anything happens, you're throwing food, I call that obedience through obesity. This is a whole other level of crazy. That's like, I joke, and I apologize if she hears the show, Honey Boo Boo School of Obedience Training, because you don't just keep feeding and feeding and feeding and feeding. First of all, try a breed or an individual dog who doesn't want treats. My breed doesn't always want treats. Some of them are little gavones. They want to eat anything and everything. I have most of my dogs, they could care less if you give them a piece of liver, you give them a treat. They don't want it. That's not what their focus is. So obedience dogs tend to be either overweight or have the tendency to be overweight because they're always hungry, which ties into probably getting your pet on a good vitamin supplement like Nuvet, N-U-V-E-T, because Nuvet will kind of calm those urges when dogs are eating inappropriate things, or they're, you know, you're constantly giving them food and they're never satiated. Because a lot of those dogs are the breeds who think Goldens, Labs, even some Pit Bulls, but Goldens, Labs, the Doodles that have poodle or, Golden or Lab in them. You look at those dogs and they're always hungry. So, yeah, so now you're taking that behavior of always being hungry and trying to tie it to behavior. It's not really the way you should be doing it, but hey, do what you wish. I'm just here to tell you the best way to do things. You can listen or not. Appreciate you being here. But I'm not going to get into an argument with the Honey Boo Boo people, because I don't have fat dogs. I don't have dogs who are counter surfing, stealing all the food. I don't have dogs who are trying to rip food out of a child's hand as it goes by, or trying to put their head down every 2 seconds because there's a slice of pizza that some homeless person threw into the side of a bush to try to save it for later. I feel bad. I mean, listen, I'm the one who wants to feed the homeless, but, you know, it's the same thing. Sometimes you give somebody money, like I was in the city yesterday and I was giving people money, but I didn't give the people begging the money. I gave the ones who were trying to collect the cans and bottles to get the 5 cents back. Those are the people who are working hard, and those are the ones who deserve it. Not that everybody doesn't deserve it, but those are the ones that I choose. And it's the same thing with dogs. When you have a dog who's got a compulsion and he's always hungry, always hungry, always hungry, it's like an alcoholic who is always drinking, always drinking, always drinking. You have to stop it somewhere. And that's why if you are one of the people who wants to use treats for everything, you go right at it. And as long as people are doing things positively and there's no, they're not using shock collars, prong collars, choker chains, kicking, yelling, screaming, you know, throwing things at dogs, you know, some of these crazy people who, you know, sit means crap companies, that, you know, you have these different methods, scientific method. The scientific method is what's in the dog's head. Okay, throwing things at a dog is not going to be the answer. Using a shock collar, you know, look at nature. Everybody's into big health and nutrition. Where in nature is there a shock collar other than lightning strike? Okay, there's not. Maybe an electric eel teaches, you know, fish not to, or larger fish not to mess with it. But other than that, I mean, hey, so let's go back to what are we going to do and what are we not going to do? So light socialization. Light socialization means taking the pet into areas when it is ready, when it's in that good mind space, and letting it enjoy that. Now, I have no problem if you want to give it some, you know, treats or feed it its food, you know, by hand. If you want to do that and your dog doesn't have other issues with eating and eating meals, that's fine, because you can associate it with something good. But don't take your fearful dog drag him into a situation he doesn't like and then try to stuff food down his throat, because you're reinforcing the fear, the anxiety. You're not reinforcing the location. And that's why so many people call me after their dogs are already messed up. And that's why I'm trying to, with all the different shows and all the different things that we do, I'm trying to help you to not be one of those people. You should be able to take your dog eventually off leash, not using shock collars, pond collars, choker chains, yelling, screaming, anything. But your dog should want to follow you. The way I look at it is, I've always been like a Pied Piper with kids. No matter how old I was, kids follow me. Kids love me. Babies love me. And I just think it's an energy. I've been told, you know, like I have a gift, whatever. I just think it's my energy. I'm a very confident energy, but I'm not an in-your-face energy. So if a dog wants to take a minute or two or 5 minutes or 10 minutes to get used to me when I'm working with a behavioral patient, every single time, though, that dog will come up to me and it will smell me, but I just have to give it enough time. I can't force it or flood it. The dog has had bad experiences or no experiences, but whatever experiences I'm shaping, I have to think about it, that that dog is using me as a barometer, as a sounding board, if you would, of what other humans are going to be like. So I don't want to ruin it for all those other people who might come after. And I don't want you to ruin it for all the other people who might come after. If that dog has a good experience with me, even though he's had a bad experience with every other human or every other situation, but he now has a good experience, if I can continue to give him those good experiences over and over and over again, he now learns that, wow, some humans are nice. Well, now if I keep him away from the bad humans, and now he sees, wow, this human is also nice, and this human is also nice, eventually we will soften that or mitigate the issues that he had. Now, it doesn't need that to take that long. It doesn't mean that you're going to be taking years to do this, because if it's taking you more than a few months to rehabilitate significantly, maybe not completely, but significantly, a dog or a cat, you're doing something wrong. So you want to be able to show that animal or that child, show them love, but show them confidence. I would say strength, but it's not too much. You don't want to use too much strength, because too much is seen as being aggression or being assertive. Assertive is not a good way to be. Confident is good. Assertive is already too much. You have to be calm, but you have to be confident in your mannerisms. You have to be not threatening. So you have to be kind of like, hey, this is how we do it, and this is what we do, and you're going to come with me, and we're going to be fine, because I'm going to protect you. I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to provide for your needs. I'm going to protect you. Well, isn't that what life is about? Isn't that why we loved our parents, those of us who were blessed enough to have wonderful parents? Isn't that exactly what everybody would want and need, to know that they're safe and to have everything that they need? And I'm not talking about being spoiled, but I am talking about everything we need. So if we have everything we need and we feel safe, we're going to grow up great. Even if we had a little bit of a shady or shaky beginning, we're going to have everything we need. Now, we may not be perfect, but we're going to be the best we can be. So let's talk a little bit about foods, too, because foods are important. We want to avoid things like corn, wheat, and soy, BHA, BHT, byproducts, propylene glycol, different things, things that are like digest. And I have entire shows on this, so we'll go into that 1 week from now. But let's talk about, you're giving them food. Don't tie the food into anything other than it's food. Don't make it work for it. You can make it wait for it, but that's starting out in a moment, and that's not being angry or anxious about it. It's just teaching them, I eat first, because in nature, whoever's in charge, whoever the leader is, whoever the one who's the protector and provider, is the one who eats first and has to eat first. They have to eat first because they have to stay strong to provide and to protect. So it just has to be that way. So let's say once we get into food, it's not always the food like, oh, you shouldn't feed your dog human food. Well, yes, but read a bag of dog food. What's in a bag of dog food? Chicken, beef, lamb, veggies,
you know, corn sometimes and some of the cheaper food, right? Isn't that people food? Don't we eat all that? So it's not the people food thing. It's the location, 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 like they say in real estate. Location, location, location. If you feed your dog things like kibble or dog treats from the table, you're teaching him to beg from that location. You could put people food in the dog bowl and the dog will be less likely to have a behavioral issue than if you feed kibble or dog cookies from the table. It's another thing that location, location, location is not just that, but it's when you guys are eating popcorn or you're eating junk or you're watching football or sports or TV and you're sitting there eating your food, that is then considered like a kitchen table. Do not feed your dog from that location, okay? Even kibble, because it's, again, location, location, location. And if you are feeding your dog in the right place, which is, you know, a place where he feels safe and secure, that's a little bit away from everything so that he's able to enjoy his food, and you wind up dropping food on your couch, of course, please try to clean it up. But don't get mad at him if he then starts digging your couch cushions because he's looking for the food. Aha. Remember, it's location, location, location. Now, talk about toys a little bit. There's some good, some bad, and some real ugly toys. Try to avoid anything made in China. I know that's a real tough one now. But please try to, not just supporting American and other New Zealand, you know, Australia, wherever, Canada, wherever they are, but it's also because of what's in it. Now, squeaky toys, not good. Now, if you have a dog that's perfectly behaved and it's fine with squeaky toys, that's fine. But when they start tearing them up, guess what that is? You're talking about dogs that are being taught to kill other animals. So a squeaky toy represents to a dog, not to a human, squeaky toy represents that you are giving it an animal. The animal is alive because it's, you know, fine. And then it starts chewing on this or biting it, and the animal starts screaming for its life. And your dog goes, whoa, great, I'm going in for the kill. I've almost got him killed. And now he tears out the squeaker. He rips it up, right? He chews on it. He punches the squeaker, and he punctures the squeaker. And now what does he do? He rips the toy up because he's got to get the squeaker out. Well, what does that represent? It represents he is going in to eat the innards, as they say, the insides of that animal. Do you see where I'm coming from? This is true. This is what dogs think. If you could ask a dog, this is what they would say. What do as humans? We either buy them a new one, or we buy a new squeaker, we restuff it and restitch it. Ah, and that's for the dogs who don't think that they should be eating squeakers. So squeaky toys, not a great thing. You can give the dog chew bones. You can give him rope toys, but don't turn it into tug of war. Please, no tug of war. You can do fetch. Tug of war teaches them to fight over things. It's like telling your two-year-old son, you can punch daddy and daddy will punch you back. And then when they're 17, now you got, you know, the police involved because you've got your husband or your ex-husband, it might be at that point, having fisticuffs with your child, with your son. Don't start teaching animals to challenge you. It's your house. It's your rules. So if it's your house and your rules, then it's just the way it is. And everyone has to follow the rules, not just the dog. We all have to follow the rules. We're going to take a very quick break, and then we're going to talk about kids and other pets and how to pick them up, how to work on training and getting your best dog that you could possibly get from what you're starting out with. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the Pet Savant Unleashed. Okay, well, as promised, we're going to talk about kids and dogs. Now, everybody knows that, whether you want to admit it or not,
kids who grow up with pets tend to be much more socialized. They tend to have a better sense of responsibility. They tend to have bigger hearts. They understand things. They learn responsibility. They learn caring about something else and caring for something else. And they also learn that sometimes they don't come first. So it's really just a great thing as a, you know, as a lesson, a life lesson. Kids that grow up with animals tend to grow up much more mature. They grow up happier because they've got their little buddy. They tend to be better adjusted, and it's just a great win-win. So how do you handle that when you have kids and other pets and you're bringing a new puppy in? Well, that's a whole show to be done on that. But basically what we want to do is integrate them, and whichever the dogs or whichever of the pets is the smallest and most fragile, so that could be the tiniest breed, that could be the one that is the elderly one, those need to be first, meaning they should get fed first, they go out the doors first. You have to help them with that at the beginning. If you see one of the other ones, let's say the younger dog trying to jump on that dog or go too close and that dog is growling, that means that the dog that's growling in that case is saying, I have to protect myself. And the reason he has to do that is because he doesn't feel that you're doing that. So when you have two dogs and the one is growling when the other gets nearby, that means that you failed in that moment at your job. And what you have to do is make sure you back the puppy or the younger dog, the one that's being growled at, away, and then go over and correct your dog, give him a little know or a little shush or whatever you want to do, whatever feels good to you, and teach that dog that I'm protecting you. So I'm correcting the puppy and saying, hey, don't go near him, but I'm also not letting my older dog get that feeling of I own everything and I can control who's around me. But it does mean that you as the owner really have to do more to prevent that dog from having to growl. So when a dog growls, it usually is a sign that we as owners didn't see the warning signals. And that's why when you see one dog snarling at the other, don't let the two, they'll work it out. Yeah, they'll work it out. And if you don't have really good pet health insurance and good luck, you're going to have two dogs in the emergency room. That one, I always love that. Well, let the two dogs, those are idiots. Okay, those are absolute idiots who say that. And I've heard obedience trainers and I've heard people, just owners, I've heard, you know, people all over the place say, you just let the dogs work it out. Okay, that's good. I had a customer many, many, many years ago who had two small dogs and one of them had the little bulgy eyes. It was a little Shih Tzu mix. And guess what? They worked it out. They worked it out at the front door when the one dog grabbed the other one by the face and its eyeball was literally hanging out by the optic nerve. That was probably one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen. And I've seen some pretty gross things, but the whole concept. So I had to basically hold the eye, try to push it back in and detach the second dog from the first. And then we went and, you know, got the dog taken care of and went to the vet. So that's sometimes how they work it out. It's like two kids, let them work it out. Oh, look, Johnny just shot Billy and Billy had a knife in his hand. So who was trying to work it out with whom? It's a stupid idea. It's your house. It's your rules. It's being kind, but being smart and being a good parent, not being a good dominate the dog, not being a good, you're going to do it my way or else, not a shock collar, not a prong collar, not a choker chain, not yanking and pulling and screaming, but being a good, stable, confident parent to your pet. And that's why I love calling it pet parents, because pet parents mean that people understand that they have to parent their pet. And that's exactly what it is. Now, how about picking up dogs and puppies? Because that ties into children. When you have a little puppy and you have a little kid, the worst thing you can do is say, here, Johnny, here, take the dog. And they run around with it or they pick it up inappropriately. They can A, drop it, B, hurt it, or C, make it afraid of children. So have your kids sit down on a rug or on the dog bed, place the dog on their lap. And the rule is that they cannot walk with the dog or stand with the dog. You can put it on a low sofa or couch or chair. Just remember, you never want to have a dog or a puppy jump off of anything that's higher than itself. So in other words, if you have a little puppy and you've got him on the edge of a bed, he can fall off very easily and get hurt. If he's on a little pet bed that's, you know, 6 inches high and he's 6 inches high, he's fine. So you have to be aware of that. But kids need to learn and show them over and over and over again, hand over hand, show them how to pick up a puppy or a dog. And then let them hold it in their lap. Do not have them walking around or picking up dogs or running with animals. People think, oh, it's so cute. It's not cute. Wait until you have a broken leg or your kid gets bitten when it's older because the kid goes to do something inappropriate. Teach your children the proper way. And don't tell them, don't hit. Say, be gentle. Remember, kids, especially if you're in the special needs community, special needs kids will remember typically the last word you said. So if you say, don't hit, they'll remember hit. If you say, be gentle, they'll remember the word gentle. So that's just a little quick tidbit of knowledge. So on their lap. And then we have exposure training. Exposure training is like taking the dog to one of the box stores, taking the dog to the park. Those are all important things. And if you have a normal, healthy, well-developed puppy, you can go anywhere. You can do anything. But again, don't overdo it. Also, don't coddle them when they're afraid. Just let them deal with it. Let them work it out in their little head while you are there. You can place yourself between them and the dangerous or scary thing. Just physically put them behind you or step in front of them so that they are behind you and you are between them and the perceived danger. Because then they say, oh, my mommy or my daddy actually is protecting me and providing for my needs. And that's what we want. It's really important to just understand behavioral cues. And if you do have something where you say, wow, this just doesn't seem right or this doesn't seem normal, you can email us at Paw Behavioral, P-A-W, Behavioral, B-E-H-A-V-I-O-R-A-L at gmail.com. Everybody always asks for our email address. You can certainly use PAW, P-A-W, behavioral at gmail.com. And I will happily answer you or one of our staff will get back to you if we don't use your question on the show. But please, it's like the Faye Dunaway, I believe was in the movie, Rita Hayworth, no wire hangers. Okay. Just keep calm, build trust. Don't scream. Don't yell. Not a big deal. It's really not a big deal. Anything that happens can be mitigated or fixed if you do it with love, compassion, confidence, and common sense. And that is today's show. So please enjoy, and let's see you back here next week for another great show teaching you what to do and, more importantly, what not to do. Have a great weekend. God bless.